Don't you hate it when people know one little thing, one tiny piece of information about you, and they act like they know you? Right? Telemarketer calls, "Hi, is this Dion Garrett?" Like, you don't know me, right? Or with other people, you know, people who are really into horoscopes, they're the worst at this. They're really into horoscopes, and they're like, "Well, of course you'd say that. You're a Pisces." You're like, "Just because I was born in March, you think you know me?" Or people who are really into profile tests, like, I'll just give it away. I'm into these kind of personality profiles tests, like Myers-Briggs. But people who just because they think they know, or they know you're Myers-Briggs type, they think they know everything about you. Like, "Yeah, I can tell you're an ENTJ. You're so aggressive." You're like, "Come on, you don't know me just because you know my type." Or anyone into birth order? Really into birth order? Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think birth order is really interesting. I have three kids, and I see this stuff play out. But again, just because you know my birth order doesn't mean you know me. And so for you to be like, "That's so middle child," well, you may know that one thing about me, but you don't know me. And isn't this the whole thing behind the thing that we love to do in St. Louis, this knowing one tiny bit of information about people and thinking that you know them? Isn't this behind the infamous St. Louis question? If you are from St. Louis and you meet someone else who grew up in St. Louis, the infamous question is, right? Because with that one piece of information, we think we're going to know something. But wherever I went to high school, it doesn't matter. You don't know me. See, I hate it when anyone tries to put me in a box. Anyone else? You like being put in boxes, the rest of you? No, I know you people. You don't like being put in a box. No one likes to be put in a box. Like, I don't like people who, just because they know my demographics, think they know something about me. In fact, sometimes when I take surveys, and I've never actually done this because I'm a social scientist by heart, at heart, and I would never corrupt good data, but sometimes when I take a survey, I'm tempted at the end when they ask you all the demographic questions after you've given your opinion, I'm tempted to lie. Just for fun, you know? Like, at the end of it, because I don't want to be written off because I'm a 45-year-old white male from the suburbs. I kind of want to be like, you know, "Yep, 18-year-old female Pacific Islander." Sounds exotic, right? And I'm like, GED, veteran, single but with five kids, making $500,000 a year. It's like, figure out what to do with those demographics, right? See, I think all of us fight against, actively struggle against being put inside of boxes. We don't like it. We resist it. And rightfully so. Your demographics, they don't say everything about you. They don't tell us how you grew up. They don't tell us what you've been through. They don't tell us what you value at your deepest level. It's right for us to fight against other people putting us in these boxes. And yet, here's the irony, I think, in life. As much as we fight against these boxes, because, you know, my demographics don't define me, so often in life, we are so quick to put ourselves into boxes. By the stickers that we put on the windows of our car, right? Driving down the road, "Hey, strangers, you don't know me. You don't know anything about me. The one thing I want you to know about me in all of the world before I cut you off is 13.1. 26.2. Anybody gonna fess up? No, put your hands down. That's bragging. We don't do that. Right? I mean, we're trying to tell the world about us. That's what you want the world to know about you. 13.1, 26.2. Or what about the way we define ourselves by the brands that we buy, and how we kind of get locked into a brand and want to identify, or how we get identified. We want to identify ourselves by our fandom or our hobbies or our kids, who they are or what our kids do. We resist anyone else putting us into boxes, and yet we willingly put ourselves into boxes all of the time. It's kind of weird, isn't it? And, you know, why do you think we do that? I think one of the reasons that we do that is that we believe that it's through boxes that we will find belonging. Through boxes, we will find belonging. And, you know, we're not wrong. You know, you go out and you buy a Jeep. Here's what happens. The moment you buy a Jeep, you become part of a cult. I mean a club. Also a cult. Pretty sure it's a cult, because when you buy a Jeep, you're driving around in your Jeep, and suddenly, just because you're driving a Jeep, guess what happens as you're driving around in a Jeep? I've seen this. I don't own a Jeep. You're driving around in a Jeep. Here's what happens. Suddenly, everyone else in a Jeep, when they pass you, they do this. They wave. They wave. Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Now, I drive a truck. No one in a Jeep ever waves at me. I wouldn't understand. It's a Jeep thing, right? I mean, you're driving around in your Jeep and you're waving, and it's like you can't see the rest of the world now. You can only see other people in Jeeps. Like, you can't see me driving around from your lifted, windowless, roofless, doorless perch of automotive elitism. Like, you don't see me now because you're driving a Jeep. Now, I'm making enemies here. I can tell there are too many Jeeps out in the parking lot. Some of you are like, it's the same reason that people sometimes get fixated about where they went to college, or they spend the rest of their lives identifying a sorority or fraternity you belong to. It's the reason people join churches. It's probably the number one reason. We're looking for belonging, but here's the problem with that. We put ourselves willingly into boxes. Sometimes we let other people put us into boxes so that we can find belonging. But have you ever noticed this, that sometimes you do that and it's okay, but then after a while, you find yourself contorting yourself. You find yourself maybe betraying parts of yourself. In order to stay in those boxes that once fit you, you try to stay there because it feels like if you no longer fit in that box, what is at stake is your belonging. And I tell you, churches are the worst at this. And I say this as a pastor, knowing I'm part of the problem, that churches were the worst at this. We all churches tend to say the same thing. We're like, come as you are. Say, come as you are. But the expectation is that you can come as you are, but you better start changing to fit our paradigm right away. Otherwise, you're not going to fit here. You won't belong here for long. Oh, and of course, if you change too much, you won't fit here either. You got to change just the right amount. And so what happens is we end up in this love-hate relationship with boxes. We don't like it when anyone puts us in a box, and yet we don't know how to survive. We especially don't know how to find belonging. Who are our people? Where is our tribe? Where do we fit in this world if we don't fit in a box? And that's why today is so important. You all know what today is. Today is, it's not a trick question, today is Easter. It's Easter. It's Easter Saturday. That's right. It's even more specific. It's Easter. Today is Easter. And in Easter, Easter is such a multifaceted event. It means so much. But you already heard, if you were here on time, you heard the narrative about what Easter means. There was that moment on Easter Sunday, that first Easter, where these women went to the tomb. And they went to the tomb because they expected to find Jesus still lying in the box that they had put him in. Literally a negative space, a rectangle, a cylinder carved out of the side of a rock, a tomb in the rock. They expected that Jesus would still be in the box where they put him. And so they go there on Easter morning and they're looking for him, expecting to find him in the box where they laid him a few hours before. And yet they show up and the stone's moved away and he's not there and they don't know what that means. And then an angel appears and the angel says, he's not here, he's alive, he's risen. And they freak out, and later Jesus appears to them in the flesh, looking like himself but being totally different too. And their minds are blown. And see, here's the thing. Easter is such, I mean, it is the most significant event that has ever happened in time. The implications are so many, and yet the one I want to focus on today is that what Jesus was doing in Easter, get this, is he's showing us how to break out of those confining boxes that do not serve us well anymore. He's showing us how to break out of those boxes that imprison us, and he's showing us how to do it in such a way that we don't have to sacrifice our belonging. Where we can break out of the boxes, but we can still have a place where we belong. See, that's what Paul, one of Jesus' first followers, one of the leaders of the church. That's what he understood. He understood that Easter wasn't only about Jesus. Easter is about all of us. Because he sat down and he wrote a letter once to some Christians in a place called Galatia. I know it sounds made up, but it's a real place. You can find it on ancient maps. Galatia, he wrote a letter to them. And here's what he said. He said, before the coming of this faith, and right here he's talking about Jesus and Easter. He's saying, before Easter, when Jesus was alive and everything changed, before that happened, here's what life was like. We were held in custody under the law, locked up until the faith that was to come would be revealed. Got this? So before the coming of this faith, we were held in custody under the law, locked up until the faith that was to come would be revealed. See, what Paul is describing is the situation going on in Galatia. There were two problems in this church. There are lots of problems, but two problems he's addressing. One is that people there kept jockeying for position. The way they would define themselves was by looking around at other people and going, I'm better than you are. Anyone else ever play that game? We do this all the time, right? And it's kind of silly when you think about it. If we're going to identify ourselves, if we're going to define ourselves, if we want to know who we really are, it seems kind of crazy that instead of looking within and really trying to understand who God has created us to be, instead, what do we always do? We look around at everybody else. And we start to define ourselves by how we compare or contrast to all the people around us. This is what the people in Galatia were doing. They were looking around and they're kind of like, you know, which rung am I on the ladder? Who's above me? Who's beneath me? Kind of like flying Southwest Airlines. You're there, you know, in the A boarding group and you're looking at all the suckas in the B and C. You're like, good luck finding overhead compartment space, right? You're looking around and you're surveying and you're trying to figure out where you stand in the pecking order. See, it was a problem in Galatia. They were jockeying for position all the time, defining themselves not by who God created them to be, but defining themselves by where they stood in relationship to other people. The second problem was not just the jockeying. The second problem was the criteria that they kept using. See, we have our criteria too. Our criteria for jockeying for position may be, you know, my level of wealth. Am I richer than you? Am I better looking than you? Is my body fat percentage lower than yours? These are the things we do to prove our worth or to find identity. But in this church, they had a different criteria. Their criteria was, how well do you fulfill the laws and the customs of the Old Testament, the Jewish laws and customs? And so the people of Galatia, they're running around and they're you know, sizing each other up, trying to figure out who's better than who. And their criteria was, how well do you fulfill the laws, the customs, the rules, the obligations? In other words, how well do you check all of the boxes of the Jewish faith, of the Jewish culture? And by that criteria, then they decided who was elite, who was best, who wasn't best, who was cast aside. And Paul, he says something really important here. He says, you know what? Those boxes that you're trying to fit into to be obedient to the law, all those religious boxes that you check to prove that you're faithful, those things in due time, those boxes turn into prison cells. Right? A box that you can't get out of, a box that you're locked into, we have a word for that. That's called prison. That's why he uses these words. We were held in custody. We were locked up. If you are not careful, Paul says, if that's how you identify yourself, if that's how you define yourself, by your ability to keep all these laws, you will end up imprisoned. And then he softens a second later and he says, you know what? But it's not that these boxes are bad. There's nothing wrong with these boxes. They're not bad. They're just not adequate anymore. See, in light of Jesus, in light of Easter, these boxes are not adequate. So here's what he says next. He says, he kind of softens, he goes from the jail cell thing to another metaphor. He says, so the law was our guardian until Christ came, that we might be justified by faith. Now that this faith has come, we are no longer under a guardian. See, guardians are good things, right? Kids, you got a parent or a guardian? You got a grown-up in your life who looks after you? Kids, raise your hand if you have someone in your life who looks after you, a grown-up who looks after you. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you didn't walk here. Someone brought you here, right? So you got someone who looks after you. That's a good thing. Guardians are a good thing. When we're little, we need people who look after us, who teach us not to play in the street. We need people who cook our food for us so that we don't burn ourselves on the stove, who cut our apples for us so we don't cut off our fingers. Right? When you're little, you need a guardian to drive you places before you can see over the steering wheel. You need a guardian. It's a good thing for a while, but there comes a point in life where you grow up, and if you still have a guardian making all of your decisions for you, cutting your apples for you, there comes a point in life where that's a little embarrassing, isn't it? Where that's dehumanizing. Free Britney! Woman still needs our prayers. She does. But we say, we're like, she may be broken, and she may have some problems, but she shouldn't be treated like a child. There's a point in life where you say, I don't need a guardian anymore. There's a point when you're growing up as a teenager somewhere in there, I don't know where the exact line is, but there comes a point where if your parents are still hiring a babysitter for you, that is offensive, right? Right? And yet if your parents leave you on your own too young, that's called neglect. See, there's this place where having a guardian is an important thing. And Paul's point is, these boxes that we check, the boxes that the people of Galatia were checking, they were helpful for a while. As God was revealing himself, all of these laws, all of these customs, they served a purpose. They had a point, but then they became a prison. Not because they're bad, they're just inadequate. And you see, Paul's saying, these things aren't bad, but there comes a point where you got to break out of the boxes. All the things that you use to identify yourself, to define you, you've got to break out of those things. I'm telling you, this is what Easter was for Jesus. Get this, before Easter, people looked at Jesus and they thought they knew who he was. Let's see, he's male, he's Jewish, he's from Nazareth, he's a human. He may be a miracle worker, he may be a great prophet. Check, check, check. We've seen his kind before. We know what he is. He fits our conceptions and our boxes. And then Easter happens. And suddenly Jesus is alive again, and he's disappearing and reappearing, and he's walking through walls. You can read about this on your own. It's true. It happens. And suddenly people are looking like, what are you? Who are you? They don't know anymore. Jesus breaks every box people tried to put him in. It's his way of saying, you think you know me? Well, you don't know me. You can't define me. And you know what? As religious people, if that's who you are, I think we run into this problem all the time still today. We think we know Jesus. But the problem is, we are taking the resurrected, living Jesus, who is beyond definition, beyond comprehension, and we're trying to make him fit into our boxes of understanding, our boxes of morality, our boxes of what it means to be religious. We're trying to put him in these boxes again, and Jesus will always defy your boxes. You cannot define him in that way, and yet even today, the risen Jesus stands before you, and he's inviting you to get to experience him without the boxes. To let him come and bring his life into your life, to make you full, to show you abundance. See, Easter is not only about Jesus breaking all the boxes, I said this earlier, but it's also for us. He's showing us the way to a fuller life and a truer sense of who we really are. A guy by the name of Richard Rohr, he's a Franciscan priest, and he writes a lot. He talks about life in three phases. He says there is a phase of construction, followed by deconstruction, followed by reconstruction. And pretty simply, when we start off in life, we're in the construction phase. We are all trying to construct a sense of self or identity. And this is a good thing. This is healthy. This phase of life is sort of like training wheels. Or when your toddler's learning to walk, it's one of those walker things. They're guardrails. See, in this construction phase, what you're getting is you're building a structure, a framework to move through life. And so you start to construct an identity, and you say, okay, I'm a son, or I'm a daughter, I'm a brother, I'm a sister. You start to learn other things about yourself. Hey, I'm an athlete, I'm a good student, I'm a musician, right? Are there other character things maybe that we heap into there and we say, I'm kind, I'm brave, I'm reliable, I'm a hard worker, I'm a leader. Maybe there's some negative things that we do, but we construct an identity, and it's a good thing. It's a healthy part of life. But then there comes a moment in life, and if you're not there yet, you will get there soon. There comes a moment in life when suddenly this identity that you've constructed, and for a while it's good and it's safe and it gives you a framework to move through life, it starts to feel like a prison. The walls that you made, the definitions, the boxes, they start to suffocate you, they start to close in, they start to feel like a tomb. We call this a midlife crisis. And yet it happens all the time through life. It definitely happens in midlife, but it happens all the time in life where we go, you know what? No. And sometimes gracefully and healthily, we start to break down these boxes. Sometimes it gets ugly and destructive, but deconstruction does not have to be destructive. It can be really, really healthy, where we start to say, hey, you know what? This was good, but it's no longer adequate. This happens all the time with kids when they go off to college. And this is the thing that parents fear, especially when we see kids deconstructing their faith, right? It's scary. And yet, I'll tell you that it's healthy. See, the faith that we teach here, our kids, the boxes we help them create for the world and God, the stuff we even teach through confirmation, it is not enough to serve you through the rest of your life. And this is what happens. You go to college, you see the world differently, and suddenly you have all these experiences, you have all these questions about the world, about people, about yourself, about God, and no longer, it doesn't fit in those boxes anymore, and you don't know what to do. And so deconstruction can be really, really helpful. Those things were adequate for a while, there comes a point in life where they are no longer adequate, and I'll just tell you, parents, that if we fear this step, if we try to fight this step with our kids, if we try to prevent deconstruction because we're afraid of what it means, all we do is prolong it. And this is true in ourselves too. You're gonna feel this like, I gotta find a way to break down some of these boxes that I've been living in. If you fight against it, you only prolong this phase. This is why some people never leave deconstruction, but the goal is not deconstruction. The goal is reconstruction. The goal is to take all of those materials, those valuable materials that you were given early in life, that you constructed a life with and an identity with, to use them like reclaimed lumber. Vintage elements, right? It's all the rage. And you start to use those things to build a life that is more adequate. A life that suits you going forward. Something truer and more expansive and better. See, that's what Paul is talking to the Jewish people about in Galatians. In light of Jesus, in light of his resurrection, it's time to deconstruct your view of who you are and what it means to be faithful and what it means to be a part of God's family. You got to tear that stuff down. In the same way Jesus broke out of the box people put him in, it's time to break out of this box, not so that we can not believe in anything, but so that we can construct something that's more adequate. Here's how he says it. Continuing on in Galatians, right? So we were locked up under a guardian. That's what we were. But things have changed. So now in Christ Jesus, you are all children of God through faith. For all of you who were baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. And he goes on and he says, there's neither Jew nor Gentile. Now, this is a big source of identity. There are like four categories here. I can't go into this very deeply. This is ethnic identity, cultural identity, religious identity, and national identity. And Paul says, you know what, all of those things, religious identity, cultural identity, ethnic identity, national identity, those things no longer define you. Neither slave nor free. He's talking about socioeconomic status, whether you're someone who owns servants or whether you're so in debt you have to hire yourself out to be a servant. That doesn't define you. Nor is there male and female. Even your biological identity doesn't ultimately define you anymore, Paul says. Now, what he's not saying is that these things cease to be true. He's just saying they're no longer adequate. They're not enough for you. There's a bigger picture of who you are, a truer sense of who you are, and it's not to be found in any of these things. Because here's the reality, you are all one in Christ Jesus, and if you belong to Christ, then you're part of God's family. You're Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. Do you see what Paul's saying? He's saying when you're willing to break out of the boxes, when you're willing to die to all of those other identity markers, there's not only something more adequate and life-giving waiting for you, but Paul says there's belonging, lasting belonging. And I can't fully unpack this today because they put a muzzle on me on Easter. They're like, it's about the singing and the Easter eggs, and so they limit my time, and I'm okay with that. But I can't unpack this today. What Paul says is that when you've been baptized into Christ, you've clothed yourselves with Christ. And this is profound. This is deep. Because what he's saying is that when you've been baptized into Christ, two things happen. One of the things that happens is the old is gone. And this doesn't just happen at the moment of your baptism. If you were baptized a long time ago, if you don't even remember it, then God's mercies are new for you every day. And here's the thing. You no longer have to be defined by your past, your greatest source of shame, your trauma, your brokenness, your struggle. Those things may be a part of you, but they no longer define you. You do not have to be identified by those things anymore. If you've been baptized into Christ, the old is gone. Not only that, but the life of Jesus, this resurrection life, it comes into you. It comes into your life and it destroys all the other boxes so that these things that used to matter so much, they don't matter so much anymore. They may still be true, but they no longer have the power to define you. And what Paul says is when you've been baptized into Christ, there's only one thing that can hold you. As you explode these boxes in life, there's one thing that can hold you, and that is Christ himself. He becomes your covering. He becomes your clothing. He becomes your envelope as you move through life. Doesn't mean that you get to now just check the box Christian on a census form. That's thinking about it the wrong way. He's saying, you know how Jesus came to life and he was brand new and it, like life and existence on another level? You are invited into a union with that. And in that kind of life, these labels, these defining characteristics, they're still true, but they're no longer adequate. God wants to give you something greater. See, Easter is not just about Jesus' resurrection. It's about new life, a new identity for all of us. And that's what this series is about. That's what we're going to keep talking about, finding the freedom to discover your truest self. Let me close with this. In this series graphic, we've got butterflies here, in part because it's spring and they're fun and they're all kind of different and interesting, just like we are. But the butterfly is also a symbol of resurrection. Do you know that? It's an ancient symbol of really Jesus' story. A caterpillar goes into a cocoon, and Jesus was laid into the tomb, and it's sealed up, and then out of the cocoon bursts this new, beautiful creature, still the same and yet different. And just like Jesus came into resurrection life more fully alive and powerful and glorious than ever before, that's what happens with the butterfly. But here's what's weird about Easter. I don't know if you feel this. We're talking about Jesus being risen, and we're saying the grave is defeated and there's victory and there's new life. And yet so often in my here and now, I don't see all the victory. I see struggle. I don't see all the new life. I see my old self. I don't see new identity. I'm still caught up in checking all the boxes. See, I think what makes Easter so hard for us to take hold of for ourselves, the reason we just let it be Jesus's day rather than making it our day, is because the work of metamorphosis is actually pretty scary. I came across this week, speaking of butterflies. It says, people talk about caterpillars becoming butterflies as though they just go into a cocoon, slap on wings, and are good to go, right? That's how we see it. And yet caterpillars, this is scientific, caterpillars have to dissolve into a disgusting pile of goo, a soup, really, to become butterflies. So if you're a mess, wrapped up in blankets right now, if you're not feeling the victory, if you're still wallowing in your old self, if you're not sure, if you're feeling the prison walls closing in on you, if that's where you find yourself, just keep going. See, the reason Easter
is so hard for us to access is because we as people, we don't want to go to the tomb with Jesus. We certainly don't want to die to the life that we know. We don't want to become a goo, a soup. We don't want our hard-fought identity, the thing that we've spent decades constructing, we don't want that to dissolve. Some of us have gotten really good at being a caterpillar. And yet, here's the promise for us. Jesus is showing us that if we're willing to follow him into the tomb, to let who we've been dissolve into a goo, if we're willing to break those boxes and no longer let those things define us, on the other side, there's something richer. There's a life and a sense of self that is so much more powerful, so much more abundant. That's what we're going to keep exploring. Stay tuned. Pray with me. God in heaven, thanks for Jesus' resurrection, and thank you for the promise that we can go the same way that he did. God, that right now we can simply become new. And that's not in an instant, but we can decide today that we want to become new, that we want the old things, even the glorious things, and certainly the shameful things. We can let those things fall away. We can let them dissolve. And we can allow you to begin to remake us, to remake our lives, to remake our sense of self into something so much bigger, so much more abundant, so much more life-giving. God, help us not latch on to the easy things, the worldly things, to be our definitions any longer. Lord, I want the life of Jesus. I want to know him, and I want to know his resurrection personally in my life. So God, call us all to death today of who we've been, and call us to new life today. Give us that promise and that assurance that even if we're in the goo right now, if we're in the mess right now, that you have not abandoned us, you are at work. And God, keep us holding on, waiting for our remaking. We pray in Jesus. Amen.